I've heard a lot of people say that one of their main goals in life is to become comfortable. Maybe some of you have even said that. Maybe you long for the day that the daily grind is over, that all the struggles that come with that daily grind are in the rearview mirror, and you can just be comfortable. And that's understandable because, after all, I have never heard anybody say that one of their main goals in life is to be uncomfortable. We all want some measure of comfort, right? And at the same time, I do believe that there are dangers that come with being too comfortable. There's just, I guess there's something about the grind, there's something about the struggles of life that have a way of keeping you humble. Because when life isn't easy, we tend to lean on our friends more, right? When you're in the struggle, we generally keep people around us who can speak into our lives, people who keep us lifted and grounded at the same time. And both of those things are important, being lifted up and encouraged and also being grounded and humble. Both of those are important. And when life is a struggle, we tend to surround ourselves with people who can do that for us. And when we are in the midst of struggle, we tend to, in those times of our lives, lean into our relationship with God more. We tend to pray more. We tend to spend more time on our knees and recognize our dependence upon God. But when we become comfortable, when the struggle is over, when we have arrived, then there is this tendency for us to become more isolated from our friends and from God. There's this tendency that kind of opens the door to all kinds of dangers, and that is especially true if you realize you find yourself in a situation where you are the most powerful person in the room. Because that's generally what happens when we arrive, when we get comfortable and the struggles of life are over, we tend to have and accumulate more power, and sometimes we find ourselves as the most important and most powerful person in the room. We don't have to look very far for examples of exactly what I'm talking about. Because just think for a moment about people who have arrived, people who have become comfortable, people who have become very powerful. In essence, people who have become the queen and king of their domain, and then have made terrible use of their power. The list could go on and on, but I think of names like Harvey Weinstein, Matt Lauer, several presidents, Bill Hybels, a pastor in Chicago, all these people who have misused their power. There's just something about comfort and power that is dangerous. And if it is not managed wisely and properly, can lead to sin and tragedy. Now, you could probably guess that this is on my mind this morning because of David. After all, we're 6 weeks into this series on David. And when we last left David, he was in a cave in the desert. He was hiding out there because, if you remember, King Saul was searching for him to kill him. He wanted to do away with David because David was a threat to his own throne. And so David's on the run. He's out in the middle of the desert with some men, and they're hiding out in a cave when, lo and behold, King Saul wanders into that very same cave where David and his men are hiding. And it's the perfect opportunity for David to take King Saul out. It's the perfect opportunity to do to Saul what Saul is trying to do to David. And nobody would blame him. I mean, it would be self-defense. Saul has been trying to take him out, so it would be perfectly normal for David to turn around and take Saul out. And in that cave, it looks like God has delivered Saul into David's hands. But in that moment, when he has this perfect opportunity, David refuses to take Saul's life. He refuses to take Saul's kingdom. He's out there in the wilderness. He's on the run for his life. And in the midst of all of that, David has learned a valuable lesson. He's learned to wait on God. And he's decided, in the midst of all his struggles, that if God wants him to be king, then God's going to have to deliver the crown to him. He decides that if he's going to be delivered from Saul, then God is going to be the one who's going to have to do it, because he refuses to take matters into his own hands. And instead, he trusts in God He refuses to take what is not his because he's learned to trust in the Lord alone. Now, there were several other times after that episode in the cave where David had perfect opportunities to take Saul out and to take Saul's kingdom. And each and every time he decides that he is not going to do it, that he is not going to lay a hand on the Lord's anointed because God put Saul in place and he's not going to take him out. Even after Saul dies in a battle with the Philistines, David refuses to take control over the entire kingdom of Israel because one of Saul's sons, Ish-bosheth, claims part of the kingdom for himself. And David refuses to go to war with Ish-bosheth because he is not going to harm even one of Saul's descendants. Now, David could have easily taken over, and Ish-bosheth probably wouldn't have given him much resistance. But David refuses to fight. In fact, after Saul's death, it takes David another 8 years before he finally becomes king over the United Kingdom of Israel. And on that day, on his coronation day as king, it's like David's struggle is over. He no longer has to be on the run. He no longer has to fear for his life. All of those nomadic years in the desert are over. And all of a sudden, he becomes the king of a vast domain. And everything David does is blessed by God. King David and the armies of Israel become almost invincible. They take care of all of Israel's enemies. David defeats the Jebusites, the Moabites, the Amalekites, the Edomites, the Ammonites, and even the dreaded Philistines. He takes them all out. And the kingdom of Israel stretches far and wide. And finally, David's struggles are over. He's the most powerful man in his world. And that is precisely the point when danger lurks for David. And that's where we'll pick up in 2 Samuel chapter 11. I'll begin reading at verse 1. In the spring, at the time when the kings go off to war, David sent Joab out with the king's men and the whole Israelite army. They destroyed the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, but David remained in Jerusalem. One evening, David got up from his bed and walked around on the roof of the palace. From the roof, he saw a woman bathing. The woman was very beautiful, and David sent someone to find out about her. The man said, "She is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam and the wife of Uriah the Hittite." Then David sent messengers to get her. She came to him, and he slept with her. Now she was purifying herself from her monthly uncleanness, and then she went back home. The woman conceived and sent word to David saying, "I am pregnant." So David sent this word to Joab, "Send me Uriah the Hittite." And Joab sent him to David. When Uriah came to David, David asked him how Joab was, how the soldiers were, and how the war was going. Then David said to Uriah, "Go down to your house and wash your feet." So Uriah left the palace, and a gift from the king was sent after him. But Uriah slept at the entrance to the palace with all his master's servants and did not go down to his house. David was told Uriah did not go home. So he asked Uriah, "Haven't you just come from a military campaign? Why didn't you go home?" Uriah said to David, "The ark and Israel and Judah are staying in tents, and my commander Joab and my Lord's men are camped in the open country. How can I go to my house and eat and drink and make love to my wife? As surely as you live, I will not do such a thing." Then David said to him, "Stay here one more day, and tomorrow I will send you back." So Uriah remained in Jerusalem that day and the next. At David's invitation, he ate and drank with him, and David made him drunk. But in the evening, Uriah went out to sleep on his mat among his master's servants. He did not go home. In the morning, David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it with Uriah. In it, he wrote, "Put Uriah out in front where the fighting is fiercest. Then withdraw from him, so he will be struck down and die." This is the word of God for the people of God. So here's how I'd like for you to help me this morning. I'd like for you to turn to a couple people around you and deliver this message. The message is, when you believe your own press release, watch out for sin and grief. Can you do that for me? When you believe your own sin. When you believe your own press release, watch out for sin and grief. So did you notice how the story starts? Verse 1 tells us, in the spring, at the time when kings go off to war, David sent Joab out with the king's men and the whole Israelite army. They destroyed the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, but David remained in Jerusalem. It seems like all of David's successes have kind of gone to his head at this point. Apparently, he thinks he's now just a little too big, a little too important to go out and do what other kings do. Because, I mean, it says very plainly, it's time for kings to go out to war. There's been a long time that has passed since David was in a struggle. It's been a long time since those days when he was out there in the desert on the run for his life. And since he's been king, everything has just been easy for David. Everything has gone his way. God has blessed his every campaign. He's conquered the city of Jerusalem. He's built this fine palace. And he's defeated almost all of Israel's army. And then when spring rolls around, according to 2 Samuel, it's the season when kings head off to war. It's like preseason training camp. I mean, it's over, and now it's time for the kickoff to start, and all the other kings are going out to kick off their wars against other people. But David instead stays behind. Instead of heading out with his troops into battle, David sends his general Joab, and he remains there in the palace. Now, David obviously starts to believe his own hype. He starts to believe his own press release. He's the most powerful man in the world. He's arrived. He's comfortable. He's such a big deal and the king of such a vast domain and such a dominant army that he doesn't need to go off to battle with his troops. I mean, why would he? He's living that cushy palace life right now, and he doesn't really want to give that up to go sleep out in the open fields and engage in these long battles. He likes it where he is. He's comfortable. And so he stays behind. After all, he has already accomplished and already accumulated everything he ever thought he would want. He's got riches. He's got a fine palace. He's got several wives. He's got a slew of children. He is the most powerful man around, and he starts to believe his own press release. He grows accustomed to getting whatever he wants. It's so interesting that when so many people get to that place, when they get everything they thought they ever wanted, when they accomplish and accumulate all the things they ever dreamed of, it's so interesting how many people discover that all of that stuff is far more empty than they ever imagined. And then they have to go search for meaning and happiness and other things to try to fill that void that can never be filled by that stuff. And so David is in that place. He's still searching for something to fill the void in his life. As he gets up from his bed one evening and he walks around the roof of his palace when he sees this beautiful woman bathing. And David burns in lust. And he sends his lackeys to find out who this woman is. He wants to know who she is. And they come back with the intel. They have the 411. They say, hey, look, she's Bathsheba. But be careful, David. She is the wife of Uriah the Hittite. He's one of your soldiers. He's out fighting for you right now. It's his wife. And even with that knowledge, David, King David, Mr., I refuse to take Saul's life. Mr., I'm going to wait and trust in the Lord. Mr., I am not going to take matters into my own hands. Mr., I am not going to take Saul's kingdom from him. In a moment, sends his people to take what is not his, to take Uriah the Hittite's wife. Now, you probably know this story as King David's most famous failure. And no doubt, it goes right up there with that episode from a few weeks ago in the village of Nob, where David's lies cost an entire village and cost the high priest Ahimelech and his entire family their lives. This, no doubt, goes right up there among David's greatest regrets. Because David had elevated himself to a point, he had elevated himself above where anybody in his circle could have kept him lifted or kept him grounded. He has elevated himself above that. He's isolated. There's nobody in his orbit who can speak truth into his life and to whom he allows the power to hold him accountable. And in that moment, isolated, he allows his lust to give way to adultery. And then when his sin found him out, when the first response test came back positive, and they learned that Bathsheba was going to have a baby, then he goes into full-blown cover-up mode, and he tries everything in his power to sweep this under the rug. He sends word to his general, Joab, to send Uriah back home. And after David asked Uriah some bogus questions, you know, it's obvious that this is just an excuse to get Uriah back home. Then he sends Uriah, he says, hey, go home, get a good night's rest, sleep in your own bed. Enjoy your wife, and then I'll send you back to battle the next day. The only problem is Uriah is an honorable man. And he knows that his fellow soldiers and his general Joab, they're sleeping out under the stars in the open country, and they're fighting a battle. So there is no way that this honorable man Uriah is going to go home and enjoy the comforts of home when his guys are out in the field. So he sleeps at the palace gate. Now, David learns of it, and he sends for Uriah again. He even tries to get Uriah all sauced up. He thinks maybe that'll help get him to go home. But that doesn't work either, because Uriah he's too honorable. And so finally, after these failed attempts to get Uriah to go home and be with his wife, he sends with Uriah a note to Joab. And he's not even concerned that Uriah might read the note before he gives it to Joab. He knows that Uriah is too honorable, too loyal for that. So he sends this note that contains in it a death warrant for Uriah by Uriah back to Joab. And Joab opens up the note and it says, put Uriah on the front line where the battle is the hottest. Pull the troops back and let the Philistines take care of the rest. And that's exactly what happened. In a very short period of time, David blows through several of the Ten Commandments. His comfort leads to complacency. His complacency leads to lust. His lust leads to adultery. His adultery leads to deceit. And then that leads ultimately to murder. See, that's the nature of sin. Sin has a way of building like a snowball rolling downhill. And it keeps getting bigger and bigger. One sin leads to another. It's a downward spiral. And in this case with David, one sin not only leads to another, but it all leads to tremendous grief and heartbreak for David. Not just David, but for the people around David. And it also leads to a damaging of David's relationship with God. Now, we know David's in the positions he's in because he's a man after God's own heart. But David's sin is repugnant to God. It damages his relationship. It creates a barrier between David and our holy God. After this episode with Bathsheba and Uriah, the prophet Nathan comes to visit David and he confronts David about his sins. And to his credit, David is humble enough to listen to the prophet Nathan. And he is broken by his sinfulness. Psalm 51 is a prayer that David writes after confronted by his sinfulness. And I want to read to you just a few verses of Psalm 51. This is verse 1. David writes, "Have mercy on me, O God, according to your steadfast love. According to your abundant mercy, blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly of my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. For I know my transgressions, and my sin is ever before me." See, David can't get away from this. He can't hide from his sins. The guilt and the pain and the grief of all that he has done dogs him day and night, and there is no escaping it. And so he cries out, this is verse 4, "Against you and you alone have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight, so that you are justified in your sentence and blameless when you pass judgment." While it's certainly true that David sinned against Bathsheba, and of course it's true that he sinned against Uriah, David identifies in his prayer that sin is primarily a problem between us and God. David knows that his actions have created heartbreak and pain and suffering, and he also knows that his sin has created a barrier between him and God. And it's a problem that he knows he can't fix. He's more isolated, and he's more despairing than ever. See, David starts believing his own press, and it ends up this huge mess. To be such a man after God's own heart, David certainly makes a royal mess of things. And that's because it's always true. When you believe your own press release, you have to watch out for sin and grief because you are vulnerable every time. You know, about 1,000 years after this episode, King David will have a descendant. His descendant will be born in David's hometown of Bethlehem. And he will become David's most famous descendant. And when that descendant, Jesus, reaches the climactic moment of his life and of his story, he calls his disciples together. It's the last night of his life. And he calls his disciples together and they have this last meal. And during that meal, he's going to tell his disciples that he is just about to come into his kingdom. He tells them, "The hour of my glory is here. I'm about to be revealed to the world." In fact, this is what we learn in John chapter 13, verse 3. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. In other words, Jesus knows that in this moment he has all the power. God the Father has put everything under his authority. There is nobody who has ever been more powerful than Jesus. And what does he do with that power? The King of all kings and the Lord of all lords responds to this tremendous power that is being delivered into his hands by getting down on his hands and knees and washing the disciples' feet. It's like Jesus is saying, "I'll show you what to do with power. Don't look to our ancestor David as an example about what to do with tremendous power. Look to me. I'm going to show you how to handle power. Don't use your power to be comfortable. Don't use your power to take whatever you want. Don't use your power to serve yourself. Use your power to serve others. If you really want to be powerful, then you have to become a servant." And Jesus gets down on his hands and knees and washes his disciples' nasty feet. After he gets up, he goes out into the darkness. He goes out to sacrifice his sinless life so that we would no longer have to be slaves to sin and death. He goes out to offer his life on our behalf so that we can be forgiven and we can be set free. So yeah, you need to know that when you believe your own press release, you better watch out for sin and grief. Because you're never more vulnerable than when you feel most powerful. When you think you got the world by the tail. Danger lurks. But you also need to know that Jesus gave His life to set us free. He gave His life so that we would not have to be plagued and dogged by sin and guilt and the weight of those burdens. He gave His life so that we could be at liberty. Jesus came to repair the breach, to remove the chasm between us and a holy God. So whatever guilt or burden you might be bearing today, just know that Jesus has made it possible for you to lay that down and be set free. Let us pray together. Gracious God, when our lives get comfortable, when we get complacent, when we are in positions of power and we're tempted to believe our own press releases, protect us from sin and grief. Help us to deal with power as Jesus did and truly be His disciples in following Him in a life of servanthood and self-sacrifice. Help us to remain humble, knowing that everything we have and everything we are is a good gift from Your gracious hand. For those of us who have been plagued by our past regrets and sins, those of us who are still carrying a heavy burden of guilt, God, remind us today that because of Your reckless love, we can lay that all down. We can lean into Your love and we can live life in liberty, free to be disciples and servants for You. We ask this in the name of the One who laid down His life for us. Amen.